Hi, you're listening to After the Collapse on RadioRegent.com, a radio show exploring issues relating to economic exploitation. To learn more about us, please visit afterthecollapse.net to read about and listen to archived recordings of our show. This week, we present part one of the Regent Park Toronto mayoral debate held at Ada Slate Hall at Daniel Spectrum on October 8th, 2014. Frontrunners Olivia Chow, John Tory, and Ari Goldkind, the Doug Ford canceled the day before, use a lively and substantive debate to offer their solutions for problems vital to the Regent Park community, including affordable housing, child poverty, community safety, youth employment, and food security. Special thanks to the Regent Park Mayoral Debate Organizing Committee and Regent Park Focus.
So I'd like to start by calling on John Tory to introduce himself and tell us a bit about his platform, and you have 3 minutes to do so. Please do.
Well, thank you very much. I won't spend too much time introducing myself on the theory that with us having been around for so many debates and campaigning for 9 months, if you want to ask questions about me, I'm quite happy to do that. But I will say, as a lifelong Leaf fan, the allure of opening night tonight, even on TV, was compelling, but not as compelling as being here in I have spent a good deal of time in this community, mainly as a volunteer, to help out where I could, and I'll mention a couple of things where I was trying to help, but also to come to understand some of the challenges and issues facing the community, whether it was the school dropout rate that was at such an enormous level and has been dramatically reduced, and the challenges posed by and the opportunities presented by the redevelopment. I was over at the Regent Park Health Center quite early on, hearing pioneers like Carolyn Acker talk about the program and the dream she had for it, and was there during meetings subsequent to that to celebrate the success of the program here, but also to celebrate the fact that it has been modeled from start right here as a grassroots initiative across the country. But it reminds me of the fact when I mentioned just that one, and you can mention a number of others, and I'm sure we'll talk about it tonight, that so many of these programs that can and have done so much good are operating on short funding cycles where they get funding for 3 years or they get funding for 2 years. And just as some of the staff people are getting to know, whether it's the kids or the families or whoever the client groups are, the funding runs out and the programs come to an end. And we have to change that. We simply have to change that. And that's going to involve a lot of work at the City Hall, at Queen's Park, and in Ottawa, because all of the governments are guilty of doing that. I visited from the planning stages through construction to move in the areas that, of course, have been revitalized so far. In the Regent Park revitalization. And I think there are many, many successes to be found in this revitalization, and often use it myself in talking about this across the city as a model in some respects. But I know there are some issues with respect to things like the relocation that have not been handled as sensitively as they might be, and I think we have to look for ways to improve that. We today have another success story as part of that, which is the substantial investment made by the private sector to create jobs here. And I'm talking about private sector concerns like the bank and the grocery store and the Tim Hortons and so on, which have created a significant number of jobs, many held by local people. But the bottom line is, we have a lot of work to do. We have a lot of work to do. And I see as my priority as mayor to make sure that the One Toronto I often talk about isn't just about ending these moments, conflicts between downtown and the suburbs and so on, but to make sure we bring everybody together in the entire city and make sure there aren't neighborhoods anywhere that are brought behind, that we use our efforts and the platform that we're given to create more partnerships between the private sector, the nonprofit sector, the government, the labor unions, and others to create jobs and to create opportunity and to make sure things are handled here in as sensitive a way as possible, whether it be community safety, relocation programs, or otherwise. We'll talk about all those things tonight. Thank you for having me here tonight.
Olivia Chow. Good evening. How are you tonight? Oh, you can do better than that. How are you tonight? A few months ago, I was here at this space where Rise Entertainment, Randall, Azim, and with a group of young people were using art, poetry, and music to talk about the hope and the dreams for this neighborhood. And that the passion and the commitment to make a difference was phenomenal. And then a few months later, I came to a barbecue in the park, and I walked into the aquatic center, the swimming pool, and saw the families having such great time. And I felt the energy of Regent Park, a place where people believe in supporting each other, and they ask the question what they can do with each other for each other. And that is so strong. It's that spirit that has driven me right through my political career, of what we can do for and with each other. And I see that when you revitalize this beautiful neighborhood, working with my friend Pam McConnell, who's here tonight, and George Smitherman, who is also here tonight, they've done so much work with all the local residents. Not only are they replacing all the housings that are now revitalized, they're building more affordable housing. And while doing that, they have created 600 new jobs for young people. And that is important. Yes, it provides hope. And it is this model that I want to make sure that we have all across the city. It's a model that say to the businesses that do have contracts with the city, that they will sign a community benefits agreement, and that they will hire young people while they redevelop a neighborhood, while they invest in the neighborhood. Since that's your tax dollar, let's put it to work. And I plan to create 5,000 jobs all across the city using the exact model that Regent Park have done. So you are leading the way. And yet we still see youth violence. And we saw the shootings recently. There's so much more we can do. And let us pledge to say that, let us support each other, invest in affordable housing, in jobs, in better support for families, because together we can create a better, a more caring, a more fair community and city right now. Thank you so much.
Goldkind.
Thank you very much. Good evening, everybody. It's great to be here with you all. Thank you. Tonight, I think, is going to be a very interesting night because the dynamics are different. Tonight, I'm going to want to talk about policy. And I'm going to ask each and every one of you and everybody watching at home to focus on the difference between the three people on this stage and their views of the policies that affect your lives. I've said for some time now that you cannot be competing for the title of the most progressive yet most conservative candidate for mayor in the city. You cannot be all things to all people. We're either a world-class city or we're a city of NIMBY. And if any of you know what I mean by that, Toronto is growing very, very rapidly. And we are not looking after our own. And every policy that I speak of at reformayor.com is all about truly making sure that the people who have been forgotten and left behind aren't. So let me tell you what I think the number one issue for tonight is, both in this debate, and it should be discussed in every home throughout Toronto. And that's the issue of income inequality. Income inequality permeates every single issue we will discuss tonight. It is the root cause of almost each and every problem in Toronto that reflects the question of inequality, which concerns me and which my whole candidacy is focused on. Now, different candidates play on this in different ways. We know how a certain nation plays on it, yet very few of its residents are better today than they were 4 years ago. But you also have people on this stage with their low tax or in and around the rate of inflation position that have adopted that thinking but explain it in a much nicer way. They say efficiencies. They say waste. They say seniors tell me. Well, that doesn't move the dial on this issue. And if you think any of this isn't municipal, I assure you that it is. The mayor's chair wields enormous power, both in this city and through this country. And being the mayor should stand for something good, positive, and most importantly, courageous. In my respectful view, it would be a cop-out to say we cannot make significant changes without calling our friends Kathleen or Steve. We have to take matters into our own hands so that on October 28th, not the 27th, but on the 28th, we stop pointing fingers. For 50 cents a day to the average household, we can raise $1 billion of revenue in my first term. And with that, for the issues we're discussing tonight, housing, income, and food security, boy, can we ever make a difference to the lives of each and every Torontonian. I look forward to discussing these issues with you tonight. Thank you.
Questions will be for Ari Goldkind. Who can respond for 2 minutes? Your co-candidates will have 2 minutes to respond each. You will have a minute for your video. So the first question is, if elected as our mayor, how do you intend to address the lack of affordable housing stock that is available in the downtown core? And what would you do to decrease the ever-growing wait list of subsidized housing units?
You first. All right, well, you just heard from me, so I will continue on. Now, let me continue where I was in my opening, because as I said, it really ties into this issue. Affordable housing, you've heard various candidates make certain promises. They will do this, and they will do that. Well, that's not true. They only will if council supports their vision. And thank you. And what I'm going to talk to you about now, for about a minute and a half, is what I think council will get behind. If any of you saw the Globe and Mail today, or the Vital Signs report, which is a pretty important thing that I invite you all to look up or Google tonight, after we're done with this debate, it talks about how Toronto's on a fiscal cliff, that we're essentially out of money. So on the issue of affordable housing, particularly the wait list, there are some ideas that we can do right away. You must incentivize developers and landlords to understand that there's a win here for them, that it's not charity to address this issue. And you do that in two ways. You reduce development charges so that they can actually see it as a profit or a win for them, because if you don't make this a win-win, any of you who know about negotiation know it's not going to happen. You also have to give developers or those dealing with the new supply tax incentives or tax credits to increase the stock. But the wait list was the second part to that question, because people can't wait for supply to be developed. So it would be very important for me to look at the existing vacancy rate. There are private apartments that sit empty. Many of you know City Place has international investors, and those apartments sit empty. We have to find a way. And it's very difficult to do, but as mayor, I would take this on personally and lead council. I would try and find a way to supplement those on low income by giving a subsidy through the city to fill those empty apartments so that everybody has the same home to go to at night that the three of us on this stage have. Thank you very much.
Well, it's tough when you spend most of your income on paying rent, and then by close to the end of the month, there's not much money left, and you have to struggle to find ways to pay for groceries. That's why building affordable housing is something that is so critically important. And I pledge to build 15,000 units of affordable housing within the next 4 years. How do we do that? We ask developers that are building big towers to put 20% of these units, these buildings, 20% of it needs to be affordable. And the city will defer to take the development charges. They can have a bit higher density, and we'll take the bonus and also make sure that the money goes back to making the unit affordable housing. We'll fast track the approval. Those are ways that have been done before, and then we can do it again to build more affordable housing. I will also use the example that's being used right here in Regent Park, because you are not only building just replacing the existing affordable housing, you're building two extra co-ops. You have done at 60 Richmond another building, and in all, at the end of the day, 500 more units of affordable housing. That is an example that we can use. And I will build it. I pledge I can do it because I have the experience to do that. Mr. Tory doesn't really have a clear plan. He said that he'll take some underground parking, you know, right now above ground parking, ask the developer to put it underground and then use the land to build housing, affordable housing. Well, actually, building underground parking lot is hugely expensive. And why would any developer do that for you if they can't make money from the affordable housing? So it's important to have a concrete plan, workable plan, and yes, we must build affordable housing.
You know, I'll make a bet that if you had asked whether any developer would have the courage and the foresight and the interest in city building to come into this neighborhood and be a pioneer in the redevelopment of Regent Park, that you would have said no one would do that. And somebody did. Because the government formed a partnership with that developer, and I commend the Daniels Corporation for the fact they stepped up and were pioneers in doing this and set an example for the rest of the city. So yes, I'm actually optimistic that there will be developers, in plural, who if we say we're going to take some pieces of land that exist adjacent to either TCHC developments that presently exist or that are presently parking lots, and that there will be somebody who will step up and say, yes, we'll make the investment to put the parking on the first couple of floors or underground, and that we're going to build new units of affordable housing above that, and there will be a competition of people who want to do it. So that is part of my question. I would start to actually spend now the city's allocated funds for TCHC repairs. The city has been waiting to spend the money, waiting for the other governments to show up as properly they should. But I think we should get on with the repairs. There's a moral reason and a business reason to start now and then go and advocate, as I will do forcefully, to the other governments that they should have and should now match that investment in making those repairs. Thirdly, I think we have to make better use and further promote the things like the foundation program that make it easier for people to gain an interest in ownership in their housing here in Regent Park and, for that matter, elsewhere. And finally, I think we have to work to try and get whatever changes may be necessary, if there are legal changes necessary, legislative changes, to make it possible for more Section 37 funds to be allocated to affordable housing. And that is something that I will put my determination behind doing, all of those things, and it will be a program that will work and that will create housing units. Thank you.
There's, you know, it's a one-minute rebuttal, and it's for Ari Goldkind. So it'll rotate on the next one. So there's only one rebuttal.
We were trying to keep track of who's going.
Sorry.
No problem.
We got it for you.
So me for a minute?
Yes,
okay.
And there's only one rebuttal on this question, and then there'll only be one on the next one.
We're doing this on the fly, everyone. Okay. Me?
They are.
All right. So let me deal with 1 minute, because I made some points to what you heard there. So very, very quickly in 1 minute. Again, I said, again, because of the dynamic in the room tonight, which I think will be very civil. Everybody, when you're listening to this, if you're in Ms. Chow's camp or Ms. Tory's camp or Mr. Ford's camp and you're asking yourself a question, the first question should be, where is the money going to come from? And I invite you to look at each of our platforms and satisfy yourself to the answer. Because I explain where the money will come from, and for 50 cents a day, it raises $1 billion to address income inequalities just like this. We are not a broke city, and I don't think we're a cheap city. Two, you can't talk about affordable housing without broadening transit and getting transit to people who don't have the same access as many of us who live on the Bloor Danforth or the Yonge University Spadina line. And when we talk about these things, you can't ask developers, you have to incentivize them. They're not going to be our friends unless we incentivize them. And lastly, when the cost of housing is rising more than most people's incomes, we have to take a very good look at a living wage in Toronto, because that is the only way we can maintain fairness and equal things out. Thank you.
Selected questions will be for Ms. Chow. So the second of our pre-selected question will be for Ms. Chow. Again, you'll have 2 minutes for a response, and your co-candidates will have 2 minutes to respond each, and you'll have a further 1 minute for a rebuttal. So the question is, what would your community safety improvement plan include, and what changes, if any, would you make to decrease incidents of gun violence and sexual assault in East Toronto? Yeah.
I think I heard the question. It's about gun violence. I don't think more policing is necessarily the solution. In fact, what we need to do is stop racial profiling and stop carding. Yes, I think it hurts. It hurts the community. It hurts young people's concept of who they are. What we need to do is start when the person is young, by creating more affordable, high-quality childcare, which I will do. And we need to create, and I pledge to create at least 3,000 more childcare spaces, because then it would allow the mom or dad to go to work if they want to, and then the kid would grow up strong. After school activities, also really important. We have to support our children and our young people. And many experts will tell you that you have to start when you are young. With having good after-school programs means that they will have a role model, that they will learn a skill, whether it's poetry or music or basketball or art, that they can grow up smart and strong and stay out of trouble. And one other element is that to provide hope in the neighborhood, good jobs and good programs to support our young people. And after the shooting, 6 black candidates came together and signed a letter and said that we must invest in our young people. That's the path forward. Deal with the root cause of the problem. I believe that we have to invest in each other. My entire program on how to do that is right here in my platform. It's something we can do together. I will invest in that money, and so that we can, our children will grow up safe and sound.
Again, you heard the phrase, and again, because this is about policy tonight, not personality, you have to invest now, Ms. Chow says. Again, when you hear that, you need to ask how. That's the difference between my candidacy and the 2 good people to my right. It's most important that each of you, when you hear where is the money going to come from or invest now, you must say how, or else we're right back to 4 years of nothing getting done. To the specific question, when I hear community safety, the first thing that comes to my mind isn't crime. It's actually all of the other things about quality of life. Good street lighting, parks, benches for elderly people. And I think when you talk about community safety, you can't leave out the fact that women, oftentimes in areas all throughout Toronto, are in much more danger or predicaments than men. And we have to address the root causes of that, whether it be domestic violence, whether it be alcohol, these things that just aren't talked about. And I see it in my job on a daily basis. I am not a fan of news releases that go out saying we have to ban handguns when there's an unfortunate shooting. Handguns are illegal. It's easy to do that because it plays well and you're going to get 5 camera trucks turning up. But if you don't address the root causes where people feel stigma, where people feel because they live in a certain area, they're already going to be targeted by police. Unless you address the root causes, and we're going to get into this in a few minutes, of food security, and people don't live well, people don't have their homes repaired, I mean, we didn't talk about that in the last question, but when you live in a home that's left in a state of disrepair because your city can't find the money to pay for it, that's a huge, huge problem. The second to last one is I'm a person who talks all the time about mental health issues. And if we're going to talk about community safety, we have to make the city much, much safer for the people that we sort of move away from on the subway. We need to move closer to those people on the subway, and that's something that's very, very important to me. And the last thing in just a few seconds, I've talked about this since the beginning of my campaign, having every police officer in the city wear lapel cameras, because that scares me. Because when we trust the police, we honestly will have a better city because it works well for both the police and for us. Thank you very much.
And you mentioned to me the other day, Ari, another benefit from the lapel cameras, which we're going to experiment with, which is that police officers will spend less time in court, and that means they'll be available to do real police work out in the communities, and I think that's another benefit. But I'd like to go through this and pick up on one of the points that's been touched on by my two colleagues, which is the illegal handguns. I would love to see the federal government, and I'll be an advocate as mayor, spending as much time on staunching the flow of illegal handguns into Canada, which is where a lot of them come from, as they do when they sort of frisk you and pat you down for a bottle of wine when you come back from a weekend away. Because they're just not making the effort. I'm convinced if they can operate thoroughly to stop you from bringing a bottle of wine or something like that into the country or measure how many of those you bring, they can do better on guns. I think we do have to have a continued and increased community policing. And I think this is where the resources have to be allocated. And I think that also will include, in terms of not only a continued commitment, but reforms to encounters between the police and citizens of all kinds. I think we have to continue on the work on making the streets and buildings more transparent. If you look at the new buildings with some of the advanced video surveillance equipment, with things like open and well-lit lobbies, as well as the streets in the same regard, I think this is going to help. I think that programs like Pixels for Pistols down here in Regent Park actually worked quite well. They made a difference. Sometimes you see it as a small difference, but it made a difference. There were people who did turn in guns. They had, because that program was there. And then I think it does come back to programs that create jobs, and I would point out that many, many of the jobs, a couple of hundred of them here, were created here solely on account of decisions made by private sector investors like RBC, Tim Hortons, Sobeys, and so on, and also programs like My Regent Park, which has helped with mentoring, it's helped with parenting, it's helped with employment. And so I think programs like that have to be given multi-year secure funding and not face the kind of prospects of all the partners they have involved of having that work come to an end when it's doing so much good. Thank you.
Well, Mr. Tory recently had a meeting with Mr. Harper, a private meeting, and I guarantee you that he did not ask for money. I saw it in the newspaper. I guarantee you that he didn't ask for extra dollar to build affordable housing, that he did say to them that we need to have more funding for child care, that we have to stamp the guns that are coming across the border illegally. And there are, because, you know why I asked that question, because I raised that? Because in the entire platform, Mr. Tory does not promise you how many units of affordable housing he's going to build, what kind of child care that he will provide, after school programs. He did not make any promise. The problem with that is that if you don't set a target, it won't get done. And those are the things that must happen right in our neighborhood all across the city. Because empty promises, just saying that those things are important, we'll wait for the private sector to make it happen, it won't work. The reason why Regent Park worked is because TCHC, working with the City of Toronto, made it happen. They say we will revitalize this neighborhood. It starts with good political leadership right here in this ward and at City Hall. And I know that's what it's about.
And now for the final question in this round. The question is for Mr. John Tory. You have 2 minutes to respond. Your candidates will have 2 minutes, and you'll have a further minute for rebuttal. Here's the question. Regent Park has a long history of diverse projects to increase food access, including gardens, food banks, and community meal programs. However, across our community and citywide, use of emergency food programs continues to increase, and diet-related health issues are becoming more common, and demand for garden spaces far outpaces supply. So, business, as usual, has not managed to decrease the amount of people in the city who are food insecure. As mayor of Toronto, what would you do to help ensure that more Torontonians would be able to access good, healthy, and sustainable food?
Well, I'll pick up and start with something that I think is the most fundamental thing that's going to provide the biggest help with this. And I want to just obviously respond to a comment Olivia made just a moment or two ago. The fact is that many of the jobs that have been created directly and indirectly as a result of the Regent Park revitalization, out of the numbers that Olivia will cite, hundreds of those jobs, hundreds, a big portion of them, were created solely by decisions taken by private sector companies to make that investment in this neighborhood, oftentimes changing their usual investment criteria because they decided they were going to be pioneers in making sure that residents in this area not only had the jobs but had access to the proper services. When I tell people there was a day, not that long ago, when there wasn't really a grocery store of the order of Sobeys, when there wasn't really a bank here, people can't believe that. But those companies stepped up, not because some government person ordered them to do so or passed a law saying they had to. They were persuaded by people, including Daniels and including government leaders and including others, to come in here and create those jobs. And I think the best thing that is going to produce food security for people is them having a job, a good, lasting, productive job. Now, after that, I would say that staff at Toronto Social Services are overworked, that are trying to handle the relationships with the food banks and making sure there are other means made available for people to get proper access to proper food. I would say that we need to look at an initiative that's going to try to save money like they're doing in the west end of the city where they have the food flow program where in that case the Daily Bread Food Bank is taking the responsibility for doing a lot of the buying and then supplying food to some of the other agencies that help people at a lower cost, which is going to be helpful. It allows them to do more. I think programs like the Community Food Works programs are also programs that are worthy of expansion. But I think it starts and ends, and I believe this in my heart, with putting people in a position where they're able to afford to buy healthy food, and the best way you're going to do that is to give them a long-term, secure, lasting, productive job, and I think that's what people want anyway. That they have.
I don't think I stood on the last answer, so I'll stand now. So sometimes I hear these answers of these candidates, and I never know what the actual answer is by the time the question's over. So Mr. Torrey said something, and again, this allows you to delineate between our plans. He said he believes in his heart of X, Y, and Z, and that's good, and that's where caring starts. But I believe in my wallet, and I think until I'm willing to go into my wallet for a little bit extra a day, because it won't make seniors flee their homes, as you might hear. In fact, it will help seniors. I think when you go to Torontonians and ask them, are you willing to go into your wallet for a few extra cents a day so that the people who have been left behind and forgotten can come up to levels that we can only dream of for some people who don't have the same opportunities? Most people, when you go explain to them what it is, when you sit down as a leader and say, don't be scared, don't have a knee-jerk reaction, that's how you start building security, because security isn't just food security, it's income security, it's having shelter. Now, here are some specific points on the issue. First of all, you have areas of the city, and Regent Park has really made improvements, but you have areas all throughout the city where you can't access a grocery store. It's McDonald's, it's strip malls, there's no nutritious food. There was an article in the New York Times that demonstrated, because in my mind, I always thought it's cheaper for a family of four to buy a meal at McDonald's. It's actually not if you buy healthy food, pasta, bread, salad. It's not more expensive to eat healthy. People don't have a lot of time on their hands. That's why we have to make sure it's an easier city to get around. Very importantly, we have hydro corridors throughout the city. Many of you might know in Hyde Park, people grow things. But we have hydro corridors with wasted space People want to plant and garden here. It's not a pie-in-the-sky thing. And the last two things are, we waste so much food in this city. We waste so much food from grocery stores, restaurants. It just gets thrown out. That has to stop. And the last point is, when I see farmers markets are usually in the area that I live, or they're in the area that Mr. Torrey or Ms. Chow live. We have to use city resources, people, and vehicles to get farmers markets of affordable produce and affordable food out to areas of the city that don't have those opportunities. That's my answer. Thank you.
I used to live up the street on St. Jamestown, and when I was growing up, when I was a teenager, my mom and dad didn't have a very good job. They didn't pay a whole lot. So time was tough, so I know how important it is to keep every penny to have good food at home. That's shaped my values right through my political career. That's why when I was a school trustee, I helped start a good food in school programs. It's now expanded to a lot of places, but we can do so much more. As your mayor, I would expand that program to 36,000 more children so they have good food in school. You know why it's important? It's important because when you're hungry, you can't learn, you can't focus. It's hard to do well in math or have study well because, you know, if you're hungry, you can't focus. So the second thing that we would do, that I would do, is to create more community garden. I know that Nick Saul and the staff have started the 40 Oak Street Community Garden. I helped start quite a few when I was a city councilor, and it's a really wonderful model, whether you are growing vegetables or having fruit trees. All of that means that you can grow locally, and the kids can see it, and the families can come together, they can plant together, grow together, eat together, harvest together. It brings the community together, it makes it strong, and it provides access to good food. And thirdly, what we can do is work with agencies like FoodShare that would start the good food basket, provide good nutritious food right in the neighborhood. All of those things we can do together. I have the plan. I have the experience. I can deliver results because I know what it takes to make things happen at City Hall.
You know, in some respects, it has something to do with what goes on at City Hall, but it's mostly about leadership from City Hall, because if you think about all these things you've just heard mentioned, all of them, starting, let's say, with the grocery store, because that's going to be the jobs. Jobs are the first place where I started, because Sobeys not only provides a place to get good food, but it provides 81 jobs, most of which went to people in this community. And I think that the more we can have those kinds of jobs, and the more we can have grocery stores like that, if that was a decision not made by the government to locate here, it was made by Sobeys themselves in the private sector. Secondly, the community gardens, and we all support that. The community gardens can take place on public or non-profit property, but they can also take place, as they're doing in Thorncliffe Park, as my friends know, based on partnership with the private sector. But I guess the point I'm trying to make is that I think all of these kinds of things involve not so much a government program, per se. It involves government leadership, leadership that can come from the mayor's office, but also partnerships with labor, with business, with non-profit organizations to actually make these things happen. That's the way I think it's going to be best done, including in the area of food. Community gardens, a food share, Sobeys making the investment they did, creating the jobs they did. I think it's going to happen through these partnerships and leadership from City Hall.
Hi. You're listening to After the Collapse on RadioRegent.com, a radio show exploring issues relating to economic exploitation. To learn more about us, please visit afterthecollapse.net to read about and listen to archived recordings of our show. This week we present part 2 of the Regent Park Toronto mayoral debate held at Ada Slate Hall at Daniel Spectrum's on October 8, 2014. Frontrunners Olivia Chow, John Tory, and Ari Goldkind, the Doug Ford canceled the day before, use a lively and substantive debate to offer their solutions for problems vital to the Regent Park community, including affordable housing, child poverty, community safety, youth employment, and food security. Special thanks to the Regent Park Mayoral Debate Organizing Committee and Regent Park Focus.
Move to the next round of the debate, the lightning round. So in this one, each candidate will be asked a question, and each candidate will have 2 minutes to respond, and there's no rebuttal. And these are the questions that were collected throughout the community in advance and as well as this evening. And so on the first question, we're going to go from right to left, so it'll be Mr. Goldkind and across. So the first question is, 40% of all neighborhoods in our city experience child poverty at rates of 30% or above 30%. Several communities with high concentration rates of public housing, such as Regent Park and Moss Park, currently have child poverty rates in excess of 50%. What concrete steps will you take as mayor to reduce these rates? In what ways will your plan to reduce poverty in this city differ from your opponents? And in which ways will what you are proposing be more effective than other candidates? And so we'll start with Mr. Gold.
Okay, I'm glad you talked about the two areas, because when you said 30%, there are areas of this city that I know that the research tells us are over 30%. But let me give you another statistic, and this is a really important one, because when we play certain groups off each other and, you know, people bicker at debates and people yell at each other, that doesn't serve anybody. It comes down to policy. So let's talk policy, no matter which candidate up here you support. We have a city that there's a current attitude that we're overtaxed and every extra dollar should go back into your pocket. I have a very, very different view of society and the purpose of government and the role of government being good. The problem is that many people don't trust the people that are in government. So how do you even begin to crack an issue like poverty? You stop looking at things like a zero-sum game, that if there's an extra 50 cents or dollar or 10 cents on the ground, we're going to trip over a dollar to pick up dimes. Now, what does that mean? I put out very boldly that the city should have a living wage. Anybody doing business with the city, and there are tens of thousands of jobs, just so you all know, there should be a living wage of $16. Now, many of you might say, well, that doesn't involve the private sector. What's the mayor's job? The mayor's job is to lead and build consensus. And when people make promises of all these things they're going to do, you're not going to do it unless you get a majority of council or 23 votes to agree with you. And everything that I'm doing, and this is where I'm going to answer about how I disagree with my colleagues here, is I talk about, and on March 17th, I put out, let's raise the land transfer tax on homes over $1.1 million. In September, Ms. Chow said that number should be over $2 million. I think it should be applying to more people. I'm the only one on this stage very openly saying, I think that the residents of this city, when it's explained to them that 50 cents a day can raise $1 billion to address poverty, mental health, disability issues, housing issues. We don't have time to wait for these things. If you think we have 4 years or 8 years to wait for these things, you've got two great choices here. I'm offering you a very different choice. Thank you.
A lot of families are trapped in a cycle of poverty because it's costly for mom or dad to go to work when you can't afford good, affordable child care. If you don't have child care, how are you going to be able to find a job? How are you going to or go back to school? So it's important, critically important, and the only candidate in this campaign to talk about investing in our children. We have to have good, high-quality, affordable child care. And you may ask, how are we going to do that? We will invest $50 million to build the child care centers. And it matched by $20 million already provided by the provincial government. And we can provide hope for at least 3,000 kids and their families. We could also provide a food program that I talked about. And that money comes from putting 1% point more on homes that are being sold by for $2 million. We can do this. And one thing that Mr. Tory keeps talking about is the private sector will go ahead and do X, Y, and Z. If that's the case, then stay in the private sector. Why bother being the mayor of the city? There is a role that the government can do. Daniels came to the table because DCHC asked them to sign a contract, Community Benefits Agreement. Kathy Wynne, our premier, just said last weekend that yes, this is a good concept because Metrolink, the provincial agency, just signed a Community Benefits Agreement and they will be providing jobs. And Mr. Tory called it a bureaucracy, NDP bureaucracy. No.
Shame.
It is the role of the government to use our tax dollars wisely and to leverage jobs for our young people. That's what I mean.
I think we've seen over and over again that if you simply rely on the government, I hear Ms. Chow being dismissive of the private sector, but at the end of the day, if people are going to have, which I think they want in this neighborhood and many other neighborhoods where some people are struggling more so than anything else, is a secure, productive, lasting job. And they want that not just to provide income, but they want the dignity and the self-respect, and they want to contribute. And if she's going to be dismissive of the private sector, and the fact is, the private sector is going to step up, not because they're ordered or regulated to do so. That isn't why Sobeys is here. That isn't why Tim Hortons and Rogers and the Royal Bank are here. They're here because they were persuaded by civic leadership, not with any money. They were persuaded it would be an act of civic leadership for them to take a bold measure and come here and create hundreds of jobs. They all did together. And so I respectfully differ with Ms. Chow. And I say that what we do have to do is, yes, the government does have to show leadership, and yes, it can do things to encourage the kinds of jobs, including some done by the Carpenters Union and others, in conjunction with Daniels and the government, but it's all about partnerships. And if she wants to be dismissive of the private sector, I'll tell you what, there will not be people coming in here making the kinds of investments those companies made in this neighborhood. I want to go and get five more of those. There are lots of other businesses that don't have. I want five more companies to come here, and I'm going to go and get them and tell them, come to Regent Park. It's one of the most exciting stories going on anywhere in Toronto. There's new buildings. There's people that are excited about their neighborhood. There are new recreational facilities. That's what I want to do. And you can be as dismissive of it as you want, but the kind of lasting, productive jobs that are going to keep people employed and help them buy food and help them provide for their families and help them afford proper housing are going to come from those kinds of lasting, productive jobs. I make no apology from that because that's just reality.
Question on this round came in from our request tonight. So this one is from the audience. And on this question, we're going to go the other way. So we'll start with Mr. Tory and head in this direction. So again, 2 minutes each. The question is, what is your Jobs for Youth plan, and do you support paid internships? Mr. Tory.
Well, I'll start with the second part of the question first. Do I support paid internships? It's now a requirement of the law. And properly so, that internships should be paid. And so the answer to your question is yes, I support paid internships. It's a matter of law, but it's a matter of morality as well, and I think we have moved to a situation. I mean, look, one of the concerns I have in terms of job creation, and again it comes back, I mean, I hate to keep talking about job creation, but it is so fundamental to people's ability to provide for themselves and for their families. And government does have a role to give people that hand up. The companies that came in here, one of the first things they did, and I think the government has to lead more and more efforts in this regard, not just for people who invest here, but I'd be bringing job fairs in here and encouraging major employers from around the city to come in here and have job fairs to sit down and look across the table at some of the very qualified people who live in this neighborhood who had trouble getting themselves inside those companies with their websites and so forth where your resume disappears into the black hole, never be seen again. But if they sit face-to-face across the table, the companies that employ people around the city, there's going to be a lot more jobs. So I think, and part of that may well be paid internships. And paid internships aren't a bad thing. I'm concerned at the fact that a lot of the jobs being created in Toronto now are part-time. But the bottom line is that if you can get somebody a paid internship, experience is proven. I would have recruited companies to give paid internships to skilled immigrants. 80% of them got a full-time job through the Career Bridge program after being in one of those paid internships. I think it is a big stepping stone to the job. And with respect to youth employment, I've also promised to double the number of companies involved in the PAY program, Toronto's single most successful youth employment program, and to reach out to far more small and medium-sized businesses and give them the support they need. And this is where government can play a role to help companies that don't have a big HR department to say, we can help you. If you make a spot available for a young person, we will help you to provide the support and to screen the people and to produce the candidates who can fill those positions.
You heard me talking about the importance of creating jobs and asking companies to sign an agreement. And yes, there are other jobs that are available that we can create together. For example, we need to create after-school programs. What we can do is to start hiring young people that are really good role model right in their community, to ask them to teach some of the children, 6 to 12 years old, for example, a skill. And you're creating jobs for a young person, and you're helping the child, that group of children that he or she will be teaching to learn a special skill. It's a win-win situation. I helped create this program called ARC in 2005. It is still going and it's expanding. What I will do is expand this program in 40 neighborhoods so that we have good after-school programs and good jobs for young people. And by the way, this program also allowed that young person to get a credit in a local community college, and it gets a good paying job. And Mr. Torrey, what you have heard about is all about calling friends. And Mr. Torrey has been the helm of big business for a long time. And I don't know why he wasn't picking up the phone and calling his friends and creating jobs. And you know in the last 4 years, the youth unemployment rate has been, I can interrupt you, okay? You know, it's amazing that it will just keep talking. But anyway, in the last 4 years, the youth unemployment rate has increased from 18% to over 22%. So one out of five young people are having a hard time finding a job. So let us focus and use City Hall, use the power of the city so that we can create a lot more jobs for young people.
So I'm going to take this question in a bit of a different way on the paid internship issue. I read a lot about this, and there was a lot of pressure to change that law. But I've looked into this a lot. Many of you may watch a show called 60 Minutes. And they did an episode where there were unpaid internships where people from, I guess what we call the Toronto priority neighborhoods, who don't feel that they have a chance, they don't feel that they can end up in this city, I mean, there it was Wall Street, but that they could end up on Bay Street here, or end up as doctors, lawyers, accountants, where they actually had some unpaid exposure. And for me, my focus wouldn't be sort of, you know, the people who come from well-to-do families who may not be able to find a job easier. To me, it's the people who don't think that they matter. It's people in certain communities that they're targeted by police, or they don't see successful stories. And I'll give you a simple explanation of where my mind went on this. I was with the good people here at the Black Business debate about 2 weeks ago. And, you know, in the room, I didn't know how this would go over, but I talked about how so many in communities throughout this city who are underprivileged or marginalized don't think that they can make it out. They don't have that mindset. Or if they do, they think they have to play basketball or be a rapper. And I said to myself, this is wrong. And what we have to do is make sure that people in this city who have been successful understand the value proposition of giving a young person a chance. And when you do that, you literally change the game. And I'm going to give you the last 10 seconds of my answer, which is this. We always have to have these answers as if we magically have these answers. I don't have perfect solutions on this, so as mayor, what I would do is I would want to hear from the experts to say, this is what works in other cities, and as the mayor and as the ultimate decider, I would make a decision based on the best advice I receive. That's how I see the role of mayor. Thank you.
So for our next question, we're going to go right to left. And this question, again, came from our audience this evening. As our population is aging, as mayor, how would you support this population, and what would you do to reduce the number of street-level obstacles, such as broken sidewalks, etc.? So it's a question not only about aging, but also about mobility and accessibility. And so we'll start with Mr. Boltheim.
This is a question that I love, because if anybody's been following my campaign, I actually had an accessibility town hall. It's on YouTube. It's my passion. You can read about it in the paper. You can go to my website. It's literally what I focus my mind on. So I want to start with the aging one. And this is where, and again, and I say this because Mr. Tory and I disagree on policy, not personality. I have talked about the importance to seniors of actually raising revenue, getting our tax base up. And Mr. Tory will say, and it's his right to say it, you may clap for it, that seniors tell me, that's the phrase he uses, because I don't think he believes it to be true. Seniors tell me that if my taxes go up 50 cents a day, I'm going to be homeless. Well, I can tell you in every city throughout North America and the world, when taxes go up to pay for the infrastructure that seniors need, mobility devices, ramps, allowing seniors to stay in their homes longer. There's programs in this city that are drastically underfunded for seniors. I'm a bottom-line person. Unless you're talking about dollars and cents, you're doing the citizens of this city a disservice. And I say to Mr. Tory, and he might disagree with me, and that's his right, find a city where when you raise taxes nominally to help the underprivileged, to help the disabled, to help senior citizens. And by the way, you can get senior rebates here on your property taxes. Calgary does it. Find a city that when you do that to take care of people, there's a parade of homeless seniors throughout the city. You're not going to find it. And I just want people to look at evidence. Don't look at personalities. Look at policy. Look at what moves the dial. To sidewalks and mobility, I'm very clear on that. You can go to my website for that, reformayor.com. It's about making the city disability-friendly. And as you all may know, when you make the city disability-friendly or seniors-friendly, you're doing both things at the same time. And I don't think you can have a city to be proud of unless you do that. As many of you know, I've talked about making Toronto the good, Toronto the much better. Thank you.
My mom is not getting much younger, and occasionally she falls, and I wheel her in her wheelchair, and you really notice the bumps and the lumps and the wires. So we need to make sure that the sidewalks and the roads are accessible. We need to make sure that the subway stations have the elevators that work and make TDC accessible. We also need to consider building more nursing homes, because there's a huge long waiting list for a nursing home. And we need to support people so they can live in their homes, because right now home care and that kind of support is really not enough. One thing that we can do in the city that is not too difficult is connect the young people with the seniors. So Meals on Wheels, for example, consider this. If the young people or the children in the area can do some arts once in a while, and then maybe every week or so when the seniors get a meal, and because they get it every day, but maybe once a week they can get an art piece into their meals. So that would bring joy into the lives of a lot of seniors. There's so much we can do in terms of intergenerational support, and that's one area we could really be creative. For example, helping seniors to learn how to use those computers. So I've seen it happen. And that teaching can really happen so that they're not as isolated at home. But ultimately, making life affordable so that they can actually be able to take the TDC to go and visit a friend, making housing affordable to them, because you and I know that 30% of the 95,000 households that are waiting for affordable housing, 30% of them are seniors. And I've had seniors that said to me, Olivia, I may not be around when I get affordable housing. So let's make life affordable for seniors by creating more affordable housing for them also.
I know he didn't mean it this way, but my friend Ari makes light of the fact that seniors are people who talk to me, and they do. I don't make these up when I say seniors tell me. They have actually told me. But let's not even define them. Let's not actually define the seniors. There are a lot of other people in this city who say that with increases in hydro and transit fares and gasoline prices and food and a host of other things people have to pay for, water and the whole thing, at the same time as they might be getting no raise at their work or a 1% raise or something like that, that the tax increase they face on their property taxes when they live in their own home is becoming something that is of real concern to them, because the total cost they have of living as against the raise they're getting that's either non-existent or very small is a problem. And so when Mr. Goldkind says it's only 50 cents a day, which, by the way, is $180 a year, there are a lot of people, seniors and others, who actually say, that's going to make a difference in my life, and it isn't going to be positive. And for seniors, there are a lot of them who say that they may be in a position where they'd have to leave their home for financial reasons after a period of time. And I think that we all know what the impact that has on seniors to be forced to leave their home. We want them to stay in their homes for as long as they possibly can. They're going to be mentally and physically better if they do, even if we have to provide them with some home care. Secondly, I want to mention mobility. It's been mentioned here. But it's a scandal what has actually happened, both vis-a-vis people with disabilities, but also seniors, that they've taken money that was allocated to make our subway stations and transit stations accessible and actually taken that money off the table and put it somewhere else. And as a result, the timetable to get those stations accessible has been pushed way out, and some of the busiest stations that are the ones that are going to help people, by the way, who are disabled or seniors who are continuing to work, those stations aren't going to be fixed for years, and that means those seniors can't use the transit system. And then finally, I'll just mention that we need to have a strategy. We have huge numbers of new seniors coming into the market. I'm only a few years away myself, and we've got to look at issues like mobility, like snow shoveling. You know, it's a big issue here around the city. Like the sidewalks, like long-term care, and like housing. We have no plan to deal with this now at all. It's all ad hocery, where people just say, maybe we'll get around to that at some point. That's why we're in the mess we're in on transit. We shouldn't let that happen vis-a-vis seniors.
Left from the audience, and I'll be honest, I couldn't decide between two, and I've decided they're related, so you're going to hear both of them. So it says, affordability in Toronto is becoming a serious issue, and the gap between the rich and the poor is increasing. Though this is a complex issue related to all levels of government, what do you propose to do to make the city a place where all people can afford a good quality of life? The second question, which may be an example of this, says, there is no affordable dental plan for low-income families. What would you do as mayor to improve that? So it's a question about the gap between the rich and the poor, and an example given about access to dental care. So on this one, we'll start with Mr. Tory and head towards me. Would everyone...
Well, I'll start with the second part first. We have some programs that provide some degree of assistance with respect to dental care, but I'm not going to stand up here. I try to be very honest with people about things that I think we can afford to do and things that I think we can... And if you said to me, do I think right at this point in the city's history can we afford to be dramatically expanding or launching a new initiative beyond the ones that exist today, which I realize are quite limited with respect to dental care, I would say the answer to that is no. Now, would I be willing to explore it in terms of sitting down? Because, again, it has to happen with the dental profession and with other governments. I mean, the notion, again, that we're going to say, you know, you just keep saying all these different things you're going to put on the wallets of property taxpayers that include a lot of people in the category I mentioned a couple of moments ago who are not awash in money, and saying, sure, why not? Let's have all these programs into our property tax bill. I just think that's being dishonest and disingenuous. And so I'm just answering that part of the question by saying it's not something that I can stand here in front of. Would I explore it and say, could we find a way to do it? Of course. But I mean, at the end of the day, I'm not going to stand up and give hope to people this is something that's going to happen. I come back on the affordability question, which was the first part, and say, yes, we have to take measures. I outline four or five. This child finds them inadequate. But I outline four or five different things we could do with respect to producing more affordable housing. But I come back to something I've said all evening, and I believe it very strongly. And that is that the best way we're going to make a city more affordable for more people is to have them in a position where they have a job at all. When we have unemployment here above the national average, and youth employment at scandalous rates of 20% and even higher in neighborhoods like this, a job. And secondly, that we make sure those are good, lasting, good jobs that are careers for people. And I think that in the end is going to help them deal with questions of affordability for the city more so than anything else we can do. Thank you.
If you listen very carefully, Mr. Tory basically said, there's nothing much that he can do. Okay? That's what you just heard. And you know, he said that, the youth unemployment rates have gone up and he has been making phone calls. Well, I don't know whether his phone is working. More young people are unemployed now, if it's been just about calling your friends and creating jobs. Why has the youth unemployment rate gone up in the last 4 years? Okay? And if it's all about having some private sectors and, calling friends and bringing them together and all of that, why is it the income gap between the rich and the poor have gone up, as you just asked us? And yes, of course we can provide dental care for low-income people. I remember when I was a city councillor, working with some of the councillors, we expanded the low-income seniors and kids dental program to across the city. So, yes, and it did break out piggy bank. So anyone that earned less than $30,000, if they are under 18, they get free dental care. And that is what we can do. And of course we can do more. Any seniors that are earning less than $30,000 or less will get free dental care. But what I've noticed in the last 4 years, the waiting lists have gone up dramatically. We have to deal with it. Because right now, if you have a toothache, you can't wait for a long time to get it fixed. And yes, we do need to invest in each other. That is the fundamental difference between myself and Mr. Tory. I am willing to invest now so we have a better quality of life, so that the gap between rich and poor can not widen so much, so that we can have good quality of life. We can choose, we can make life more affordable for everyone, no matter what their income is. Everyone should count.
Here's where I get to point out some pretty significant differences between all of us. Ms. Chow, who, again, very careful as to how to word this, said to you 5 times, invest now, do more, do this, buy that. Let's leave personalities aside. These are people who care about the city. If you're a person who cares about policy, I hope you're watching this at home and saying, where's the money going to come from, Olivia? And this is why... And this is why many people are disappointed. So when Ms. Chow says that she's the only progressive, I mean, I am in this room, and I think I understand what progressive means, and you are not going to make a dent in this issue, either of the two subjects, when you are running on a no-tax increase or a compulsion system at or around or below. We have a mayor and a brother who have those policies. They don't work. They don't work for the very nation they pretend to care about. They don't work. If anybody's at home, Google a book. Thank you. Google a book called What's the Matter with Kansas? I really mean it. Google a book called What's the Matter with Kansas if you care about these issues. You cannot be somebody who says, invest now, we'll spend millions, when the city's on a fiscal cliff. You just can't. And lastly, because I think I have 30 seconds left, Mr. Tory says, you're going to put this on the wallets of the property taxpayers, and I think he said that. Well, I have a question for everybody in this room and watching at home. Who are we as a city? Are we a city that wants to be right-wing and Tea Party and every single cent goes into our own pockets rather than caring about the greater good? The last time I checked, every city that cares about the greater good, it's a win-win for the city and it's a win-win for the people whose wallets need our help as a city more than anybody. Thank you.
We're going to do something a little different for the end. So the organizing committee for this debate thought that it was important to hear from our candidates as people and as colleagues, not just candidates. So we're going to ask each candidate to say quickly, probably in about 45 seconds or less, something positive about one of your fellow candidates. Get to choose who. We drew straws for you. So we're going to start. I'll tell you each who you're. So it'll be Ari Goldkind will speak about Olivia Chow. Olivia Chow will speak about John Tory, and John Tory will speak about Ari Goldkind. And so we'll start with Ari Goldkind about Olivia Chow.
I hate to surprise everybody because this stupid election season where people bicker on the stage and they yell at each other, I can talk about Ms. Chow for 5 minutes. So I'm not allowed. But unless you want me to, because I could. Here's what I'm going to say, and I don't know if you're timing me, but you asked me, we don't get these questions in advance. So Ms. Chow cares about this city. She cares about the people in it. She has spent her life in public service. She's had 30 years to get these things right, and she has stood up and talked about these things. But there is a disconnect, and this is not knocking this child. There is this thing about wanting to get elected. Hold on. No, you're going to like this. This is me. There is this thing about wanting to get elected and saying, and Royce and James wrote a story in the paper about me today saying the things I'm saying out loud to everybody won't get me elected because I'm just laying out the fact that we need more revenue in the city. I believe in my heart, I do, that Ms. Chow knows this, and I'm saying this on this stage, that if she had the courage, the desire to say these things out loud, this would be a very different campaign. And this is the reason that I say Ms. Chow does care. She knows these things. She knows we're not a broke city. She wants to make people's lives better. She cares about youth. She cares about children. She cares about seniors. And anybody who's not Ms. Chow, and she'll tell you that herself, I've gone up to her personally and said, you don't have to take that crap. So that's all I have to say.
Now we'll have Olivia Chow about John Tory.
I know we're on. I said crap. I'm sorry. That was not a nice word.
Well, Mr. Tory has nice kept hair. he can talk fast, pretty smooth, and he can talk. And he has an amazing phone book. Yeah, good Rolodex, and that's also important. So those are the three areas that I can say about Mr. Tory. And some of his friends doesn't like me for some reason. Don't thank you. So those are some of the good things that Mr. Tory have. And in his work, in some of the private sector, in terms of donations to a lot of very worthy costs, is worthy of celebration. Now, that is true. And it is very long list, and he has done a lot of it for a long time.
Uh,
I think the decision people make to step up and stand for public office is perhaps a bigger one than many people in this audience or anywhere in the city would realize. In the case of Olivia and I, we both gave up jobs to do it, and I'm not asking for anybody's sympathy. I'm just saying it's a fact that people do that if they're really committed to running for office in the city. Ari Goldkind has continued with his work and has tried to do that and run and be a real candidate. I mean, he's been a real candidate in that he's gone door to door. He has shown up at these debates and actually fought to get in them at times when people were trying to exclude him. And I just admire so much anybody that has so much passion and has so much strength and conviction about the things he believes in. And I think you see it's evident from the way he speaks that he would take of his time, take away from his career. And I know because we've had a little chat about it, it's cost him. It's not about money. But, you know, when you're practicing law or involved in a profession, time is money. And if you're not working, you're not earning a living. So he has made a huge sacrifice, and his family, in order to do this. And I think it is so important if we want to have a healthy democracy, but more than that, a healthy city, that people like him who are outspoken and who don't engage in very much of the political speak, step up and run for public office. And I very much admire, and I told him so privately before we were asked this question, I admire the fact that he's doing it, and a number of other people too, some of whom have better prospects for winning than others, but they're stepping up because they believe in their city and they believe in the democratic process. So I admire that.
If you'd like to give a one-minute close, you may, as we have a couple of minutes. So, because I know, Ms. Chow, you didn't have the opportunity to go first. If you'd like to just say a few words in closing, you're welcome to. And we'll perhaps do, 1 minute if you like, or less. Mm-hmm. Just because there's a little bit of time for you, so it makes sense too. Mm-hmm.
Well, thank you for staying tonight. Thank you for being here tonight. And thank you for being here and at Regent Park, showing the rest of the city how when people come together, you have the power to make a difference. Because, yes, that's what it is all about.
Yeah.
And we are at a crossroad in this city. We can move forward, make progress, or continue the 4 years of failed policies in the past, another 4 years of Mr. Tory and Mr. Ford's policies, which basically say that we cannot invest in each other, that we cannot ask what we can do for each other and with each other. That is not who I am. I believe we can do it together. I believe we can invest now. I believe we can have better bus services now. Mr. Tory does not. I believe that we can create jobs. Mr. Tory, things just need to call his friends. And I believe that we can create good, affordable housing and good child care right now for those that are so in need of them. And Mr. Tory and Mr. Ford won't commit to it. So you see a difference. A difference that I have the experience, I have the passion, I have the track record to get things done, and I hope I can get your support coming October 27th. Thank you.
That's tough.
We weren't expecting that closing. So let me get right to it. If we had the funds in this city to do all the things that we know we need, they'd be done already. You wouldn't be here tonight. You would maybe gone to the Leaf game like Doug. I don't know. But, you know, but let me just say this. And I leave this to the people of the city to decide, because it's not up to me. I think this is the kind of debate that the city needs, because it's more of a discussion. We're not yelling at each other. We're putting out different policies. We're putting out very different policies for the voter to choose from. So all I'll say is, you all know the noise of my last week or two and how the debate process is being controlled by forces I can't control. So I say this to Mr. Tory and Ms. Chow, if you feel I have something to contribute to this debate, I'm hoping that you could encourage more debate organizers to have me there. This city should not be controlled. This city should not be controlled by people who have been handed things because of unforeseen circumstances. These are the kinds of debates that we should be having, and I thank every one of you for coming out. And if you think that this city is worth the amount that I think it is, per day, per year, I encourage you to take a look at what my platform is, because we can build the city of yes and the city that we all dream of. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for being here tonight and for being such a good group of listeners to us. I happen to believe that what's really going to be important going forward is to have a period of stability and of competent, sensible, rational leadership at the City Hall. We can't go on for four more years with the kind of division that we've seen over there the last 4 years. It is happening to think that the city, you know, while the city is good, it's going to take more to make it great. And making it great is going to mean we actually get on with building some transit, including my smart track proposal, which will make a positive difference right across the city in 7 years. We've got to get on, yes, with attracting jobs. And yes, that means the people who really create real, lasting jobs for the vast majority, getting the private sector animated, getting new companies to come here from around the world to create jobs for people. And yes, it means getting the other governments on side to support affordable housing and support transit. So we have to make that effort to get City Council working more effectively together and the division. We have to make the other governments come on side to invest in this city. And that is what it's going to take this city from good to great. Because as long as there are places where people are left behind, as long as there's transit not being built, jobs not being attracted to this city, we will be stopped, notwithstanding the talent we have here, from going from good to great. That's what I'm going to try to do if you elect me as your mayor after October the 27th. Thank you for listening.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for your time this evening, Olivia Chow, Ari Goldkind, and John Tory. And thank you for your words of kindness to each other as well. I'd like to take a moment to thank the debate organizers, the Yonge Street Mission, Christian Resource Center, CRC, the TD Center of Learning, Regent Park Community Health Center, Central Neighborhood House, Regent Park Focus, the Center of Social Innovation, Regent Park Community Food Center, and SEAS Center.
And finally, we'd like to thank everyone here for coming tonight. A gentle reminder, Election Day is October the 27th. There's some information on your way out this evening in terms of how to confirm that you're registered and about polling information, so please check that out on your way out. Thanks so much, everyone.
Thanks for listening to Part 2 of the Regent Park Toronto Mayoral Debate, held on October 8th, 2014 at Ada Slate Hall. I'm Louis Moroney, and for myself and Jim Vernon, we'd like to thank you for listening to After the Collapse on RadioRegent.com. You can read about and listen to archived episodes of After the Collapse at afterthecollapse.net.